Welcome to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, where the discussion will be about issues that affect people on a daily basis. Life's Issues is brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Lloyd Rosen.
Welcome to another week of Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. We're here. I can't believe it. Another week has gone, and we're here to discuss another two issues with two great people, talking about what has made them survive in this world because of all the stress and headaches and expectations. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to do, but we do find ways of doing it, and we have two more guests today, and we'll introduce them in a few minutes. But first, if you'd like to call in here to the show, it's 347-989-1363. Press the number 1 on your phone, and you can definitely be put into the queue for our producer to get you your question on the air. If you want to go to Facebook, if you like social media, you can go to Tough Talk Radio Network or my personal page, which is Lloyd S. Rosen. You can also email me. I'd love to get your email. If you would like to write me a question, I'll get the answer for you. If you just want to make a comment to me, that's fine too. You can go to Bowler, which is B as in boy, O-W-L-E-R 900 at sbcglobal.net. And you can definitely check us out at Life Issues with Lloyd Rosen. You can go there and you can click on the register to be a guest tab, and register if you have anything you want to promote, whether a book, a topic, an issue that you grew up with, anything that you'd like to get the message out to our listeners. You can definitely go to Life's Issues, and that's life with an S at the end, and Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, you can go there and register. You can go to www.toughtalkradionetwork.com, and all of our shows are listed there. You can read about the hosts. You can read about the shows. You can definitely learn about us, and even if you're interested in being a host, we have some new shows that are trying to get on the air, and we need hosts, so please don't hesitate to email us there. You can also download us on iTunes. iTunes is a way of listening to the show after you go live. You can download it onto iTunes. You can listen to it as many times as you want. If you come up with a question after the show, you can definitely email me at my email address, and I will get back to you on that, too. Today is going to be an interesting day. We have two people on the show today. One is a definite survivor of an illness and definitely had his ups and downs in life. The other one is a gentleman who is a humorist and thinks that there should be more laughter in the world, which I totally agree with. I take life very carefree, very unseriously, actually, if that's a word. And I don't know why some people just say that's not politically correct. You shouldn't say that, that you can't say that around people or whatever, because I just make people laugh. I make people laugh all day at my job. I make people laugh all day when I'm not at work. I'm just a funny kind of guy, and hopefully my second guest and I can have some laughs together. But we're in store for a treat today with my first guest, and I think you will enjoy it. I know I'm looking forward to it. I've read a lot on his website, and so I know a little bit about him and his background. So I will give you a little bit of that insight when I come back and introduce him right after these messages.
Are you concerned about your job, your career, or your future? When you become CARE certified in the workplace, these concerns will be eliminated while your career soars in the process. Up until now, CARE certification was only available through company-sponsored seminars, but now you can become CARE certified in the workplace on your own time. Order Module 1 today and begin the transformation. There's unlimited opportunity in the workplace today, provided you have the right strategy. Becoming CARE certified is the right strategy. For more information and to order, go to charliespeaking.com.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, a show that delves into the hot topics of life. Lloyd takes life's issues head-on with hard-hitting interviews with professionals such as doctors and teachers, as well as those that have experienced life's alerting issues, whether professional, emotional, or physical. Lloyd wants to help those that are searching for answers to living a successful life. Life's Issues airs every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Find out more at lifesissueswithlloydrosen.com.
Welcome back to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. We are going to start our show today with a gentleman who is a Mikisew Cree First Nation Indian. He was born and raised in Fort McMurray, Canada. And in his book, which is titled Bad to the Bone, he takes you on a journey of his life, which is an incredible story of pain, hopelessness, and a feeling of inadequacy. He had a dad who was a successful businessman who set the bar extremely high. He didn't think he could reach that bar, and he wanted to live out his passion. And we'll get more into that in a minute, but he's a musician, he's an author, he is an advocate for bone marrow transplants. I'd like to bring in David Takaro, Jr. How are you, David?
Hey, I'm excellent. Thank you so very much for giving me this opportunity to share my story with you and your listeners. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome, because like I said, I read your website, I know your story, and I'm interested to get it out to my listeners. So you wrote the book, Bad to the Bone, which is basically a heart-wrenching story that inspires people to believe that there is no evidence of hope, but you're here to tell us that there is an evidence of hope.
Oh, yes.
And so tell us a little bit about your story and your book.
Well, my story is, it kind of goes back to my youth and, you know, where I was really an introverted person because my dad, you know, like you said, was such a successful businessman and he had set the bar for himself really high. And I, you know, growing up, I felt like I had to do the exact same thing he did. And I fell short quite a lot. So that caused a lot of inadequacies in me. And I was a very introverted person because of it. And then from there, it kind of goes to, you know, as I get older, kind of just existing in life, not really living, just kind of floating around. And then, you know, in December 24th, Christmas Eve 2006, is when I'm, you know, diagnosed with leukemia. And it's, you know, where the fight for my life really begins. And it just kind of goes to show how, you know, the power of positive thinking really is what got me through what I needed to get through. And if it wasn't for that, this could have been a different outcome.
Most definitely. So in 2006, you found out you had leukemia, but
yes.
your struggles started well before 2006, am I correct?
Yes, but there are also, you know, struggles that I placed upon myself. So, I mean, I got to take responsibility for that. You know, I mean, it wasn't my dad didn't do anything. You know, all he ever did was encourage me. You know, when I was a teenager, he bought me a set of drums, and later on, he got me, you know, my first set of turntables. When I graduated from high school, you know, he wanted me to go to record producing school. So he was always there for me in whatever it is I wanted to do. But like I said, I placed, you know, his success as what I needed to do. And I came up very short on that.
So, how old would you say you were when you realized, or when your dad was there for you, but you put too much stress and pressure on yourself? 15, 16?
No. See, I probably didn't get that until I was about maybe 20, 22 years old, in that range, you know, and that's when I was like, you know, he really is there for me. And then, you know, like I said, my dad was a very, very successful businessman. And even when I asked him to go to fashion school, you know, I thought he was going to say no and kind of be like, why do you want to go to fashion school? But he's like, yeah, sure, go nuts, go to fashion school. you know? And that's kind of when I realized that he does want me to be myself and do whatever it is I want to do. And so I got signed up, and I went to John Cassablanca's Fashion Institute in Vancouver.
So he was just – he just wanted you to be successful in whatever way you were willing
exactly.
to be successful. But
exactly.
you were thinking he wanted you to be what he was and do what
yes.
he did, which was totally – and isn't that amazing, David, to think that and to live with that stress and agony your most of – you know, most of the time, and then find out that your dad just wants you to be happy no matter what you do.
Exactly, and it's, you know, how our mind plays tricks on us, you know what I mean? Because I don't know. I mean, I just kept thinking the worst, and I'm not really sure why I did that, but, you know, it was just me being silly, really.
I'm sitting here, and I'm listening to your story, and I'm going, wow, that sounds just like me. I could never, I could never make my father happy. I always felt short. And I always thought there was nothing that I was going to do that it was ever going to make him pleased. Once he died, I lived with the burden for 10 years of, I wish I could have made it up to him. I wish we could have closed the book and everything. And after 10 years, I was able to close the book as far as that with him, even though he was gone, because I believe in the afterlife and the fact that you never die. So I was able to communicate with him. And he basically told me, stop trying to prove yourself as a son to me and start being a father to your son. So
yes, love that. That's brilliant right there.
And I've been that ever since, and I've had a great relationship with him. And I'm here to tell you and my whole audience, if you have the opportunity to make amends with a parent, mother or father, do it before they pass away. So
absolutely.
And I think that's what happened with you. I think you were able to make amends, and that's great.
Yes, absolutely it was, you know. And like I said, you know, it was me doing this to myself. You know, my father wasn't – he was always there for me to nurture whatever it is I wanted to do. So, you know, once I figured it out, you know, our relationship just got a lot better from there. And he knows how much I love music, you know, and he likes to even come to concerts with me. Last week, you know, I was up in Vancouver with him, and, you know, we went to a concert together, and it was amazing.
Yeah, see, and you're very lucky to still have him around to do that. Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, I am. Absolutely blessed that he's still around.
Yes, you are. Now, tell me a little bit about the leukemia. Tell me about some of the symptoms that you realized you had once you found out you had it and how you handled it.
Well, early on, we were burying my grandfather, I believe it was November 13th, 2006, up in Fort Chippewyan, Alberta. And I remember that day getting this really intense, sharp stabbing pain in my left side. It was like a hot knife just repeatedly stabbing me. And from there, you know, my symptoms just progressively got worse. Extreme fatigue, nausea, vomiting, hemorrhaging, everything you can think of. And for me, I thought it was just really bad, a really bad flu. And it wasn't until Christmas Eve, where I was brought into the hospital in Kelowna, British Columbia, that they had diagnosed me with ALL leukemia after a series of blood draws, where my blood was progressively getting worse each time.
Wow. So, yeah, it takes something like that. I mean, I'm not gonna rain on your parade, because this is about you and your book. But in 2012. I had lost about 20 pounds and found out by just queer coincidence when I went to the hospital because I had a cyst that I had diabetes and my blood sugar was at 492.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting how these things happen. And so getting back to your story, what is the message in terms of your book that you're trying to send?
It's simple. It's trying to raise the awareness of the importance of bone marrow donation and to let people know that it's a very painless process, because I've come across a lot of people who seem to have the notion that it's a very painful process, and it's just not that way anymore. With technology coming as far as it has, you know, it's as simple as a needle in one arm, a needle in the other arm. The blood will go into a machine, and it'll keep your bone marrow but put your blood and platelets back into you, so you're not losing any blood. And, you know, with that marrow, it's going to save a life. So I'm just trying to get people to sign up on my website, www.davidtuckerow.com, TUCCARO. There's a link in there that says become a donor. It'll give you all the information you need to sign up, and it's as simple as swabbing the inside of your cheek. And from there, you send it back, and they'll run your DNA, and if you're a match, instantly they'll let you know. Otherwise, they'll keep your DNA on file until you are a match with somebody, in which, you know, the process will start. And like I said, it's a very painless process. And everybody out there, you know, I'm just trying to let them know that, you know, there's no pain involved, and it's the rewards are you're going to be saving a life. So I'm trying to create as many success stories as possible with this, and, you know, people donating and people receiving and then people meeting their donors.
Now, okay, so I go to your website, I register to be a donor, I swab my cheek, send it off to where?
It'll all be there, and it's like a SASE. It's a self-addressed stamped envelope. You just put it back in there and send it back to them. The delete blood cancer, it's all free of charge, and they go from there. They'll send it to you for free. They'll give you the free swab kit, and then they'll give you the envelope to put it back and send it to them. So there's no charge for you at all.
And they will definitely – well, so they'll keep you on file, as you said, just in case you do become a match for somebody. You can
yes.
save that person's life. That's incredible. I'm going to do that when I get home
awesome.
Tonight because – based on what I've been through and based on what I believe, I think, you know, I also believe that you should be a organ donor on your driver's license as well. So,
absolutely, yes.
You know, on your website, obviously we just covered this, but you register people on your website to become a donor. Tell me a little bit more about that. Is it the leukemia that you had that made you so sure that you wanted to do this?
Yes. You know, because a bone marrow transplant is what saved my life. So that's why I'm raising the importance of the awareness of donating bone marrow, because, it, like I said, it's what saved my life. And if I hadn't got it, I wouldn't be here talking with you today. You know what I mean? So it's a very necessary thing to be having done right now. So I'm just trying to get people to, you know, get started with it and get the ball rolling and just, you know, get as many of these bone marrow drives as possible all throughout the world.
And let me add a postscript to that comment that you just made, or let me ask you a question, and then I'll add a postscript. The person whose bone marrow saved your life was not a family member?
No, it actually was a complete stranger from the other side of the world. I was
okay.
in Western Canada, in Vancouver, British Columbia, and my donor was over in Germany.
Okay, so that was my point. I was hoping that was going to be your answer, because that is my point in promoting for you on the radio show here for people to sign up, because you never know. You may be sitting here in the United States and somebody in Japan may need you. Somebody in Asia may need you. It's not just family members that match up with people who need bone marrow transplants. So as David said, please go to his website, and he'll give you that information in a few minutes, and sign up and become a donor, because you never know. First of all, you never know whose life you're going to save, but you never know who you may need to save your life. So it's each human being helping each human being. It's like Hillary Clinton said a number of years ago, it takes a village to raise a family. So I think that's a noble thing that you're doing, and I think that everybody who's in earshot of my show today should definitely sign up for it. So tell me a little bit more about your book. What was the purpose? Was it a self-satisfying writing, or did you have a purpose for writing it?
No, it was a purpose. A couple of reasons. One, it was for me, myself, to get up, you know, all the feelings that I was holding on to get them out. And to, you know, it was a very therapeutic process for me to write this book. But most importantly, when I was going through what I was going through, I never had anybody there, like, firsthand to ask, you know, what happens when I go through a spinal tap, or what happens when I start getting chemo brain, or what happens when all the, you know, like just so many questions I, you know, I never got the answers to, because I'm getting my family's point of view, I'm getting the doctor's point of view, but never a survivor. So I kind of wanted to put it out there that, you know, there are people that go through this, and these are some of the things that I did that helped me. Maybe they can help you. And also, again, you know, talking about the bone marrow transplant and just how that saved my life. So there's, you know, kind of a lot that goes on with this book, and it just kind of talks about, just like you said, it could happen to anybody, and, you know, with a person being on the other side of the world, it just makes it that much more important to be able to donate bone marrow.
And it's obviously people who write books write them for different reasons. The process that they go through causes them to have different feelings and change emotionally and stuff like that. And so where can my listeners get your book, and what's your website? And let's give them some information before it gets too late here.
All right. You can get my book, Bad to the Bone, The True Story of David Tuckerow Jr., on Barnes & Noble, Kobo, iTunes, and you can also get it on my website, www.davidtuckerow.com, T-U-C-C-A-R-O.com, and I will give you a signed copy of the hardback edition. And also, like I said, you can get it on Kobo, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, and iTunes.
Sounds good. Now, I got probably a question that you hear a lot about, but after writing your book, do you think it helped your family understand you more?
Oh, absolutely, it did.
So they read the book?
Yes.
And they understand you more, and they didn't read the book and look at it and go, David, I didn't know you felt that way, or David, I didn't know this, or David, I didn't know that.
Exactly how it was. You know, they're like, there's so many things in there, you know, we thought you were going through this when actually you weren't, you know, we were so far from that. And it really helped them understand me a lot better. So, you know, that was another really good thing that came from writing this book, was that my family was able to understand me a lot better.
And it pulled you closer together as a family.
Absolutely.
The reason I asked the question that way is because I wrote a book about my situation with the depression that we talked about off air. And I have the book. My aunt and uncle have read it. My kids have read it. I don't even know if my sister's read it. My brother, I don't know if they've read it. But I know for a fact that my mother has not read it because she wants me to give her a copy. And I know what's in the book, and I don't want to deal with her taking it the wrong way. So
yes.
My girlfriend is saying to me, give her the book, tell her this is my angle of how I looked at it. If you look at it differently, I apologize to you beforehand, but please don't take it personally and don't get upset with me.
Yes.
So maybe I will give her a copy of the book. I've never had a chance to talk to anybody who's written a book and had the book affect their family in a positive way like that. So I wanted to just find out from you personally, you know, if you had no hesitation about giving them a copy of the book or anything.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Well, then maybe I'll get a copy of my book and give it to my mom and say, hey, have fun.
There you go. Yeah, absolutely, you know. Because, I mean, she's not going to be able to understand if, you know, she doesn't know. So maybe, you know, giving her the book, she'll be able to understand a bit more.
Well, that's true, and I just hope for my sake that she understands in the way that I meant it to be taken. So, and we can always have that conversation after she reads the book, too. So,
exactly.
You know, it's not how am I saying this? I'm not doing it to push us apart. I'm doing it to pull us together, so I hope that she understands that.
Sees it that way.
Yeah, sees it that way. And if she does, she does. And if she doesn't, there's not much I can do about that, right? Because
absolutely.
I'm my own person. She's her own person. So let me ask you a few things as far as inadequacy. And, you know, it says in your biography that you had a journey of self-discovery through pain, hopelessness, and feeling of inadequacy. But you've come out of it to inspire others to overcome adversity. I understand that leukemia was a scary situation. You didn't know whether you were going to live or die. You lived. And was it coming through the leukemia and the fact that you were going to live and the doctor told you you were going to have 100% recovery that you realized that being negative or being downtrodden was not your way of doing anything anymore? And that
yep.
you would. Okay. That's what I thought, too, because that's how I did it, too. When I became healthy and realized that I was not going to succeed at killing myself, that there was nothing in this world that could be any worse than, say, having leukemia or trying to kill yourself. And I'm trying to get people to understand that. And I had a conversation with a gentleman the other day, and he was telling me, well, you know, different people have different levels of understanding in terms of what's painful. Some people might think a hangnail is the most painful thing in the world versus, you know, over trying to kill themselves. So I don't know how people think, but I would personally think that laying in a hospital bed, not knowing whether you're going to live or die or whether you're going to, is probably the most important thing in people's lives, and they should appreciate life and take it with every grain of salt that they can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah. And that's the way I look at life. And that's, I mean, if you were to sit down and have a longer conversation with me, you'd find out, and have a deeper conversation with me, you'd find out that my whole spirituality goes back to a strong belief in the fact that God walks with me every day. So and I think he probably, and based on your background, you probably have a very spiritual and a very
absolutely
strong understanding of God.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, you should succeed at what you're doing, and everybody should be on your bandwagon. Let me have you give the website and the information where people can reach you one more time, and then I'm going to say thank you.
All right. Anybody that wants to reach out to me, you can get a hold of me on Facebook at David Tuckero, on Twitter at DJ Tuckero, T-U-C-C-A-R-O. And also, if you go to my website, www.davidtuckero, T-U-C-C-A-R-O.com, you can contact me through there. And for copies of my book, you can go to Barnes & Noble, iTunes, Kobo, and Amazon.com. And if you go to my website again, David Tuckero, T-U-C-C-A-R-O, I will give you an autographed hardback edition of my book. You can sign up and purchase it there.
Sounds great to me. David, it's been a very interesting and fun-filled half hour with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It was great.
Hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again, because I know I'd like you to definitely contact me about the subject we were talking about off the air.
Definitely, yes.
And hopefully we can hook up again, and I'll write you an email so you have my email address, and we'll keep in touch.
Perfect. Right on. Thank you very much again for this, and I really appreciate it, and I hope we can get some registered bone marrow donors out there. So go to davidtuckero.com, and let's sign up and get some bone marrow success stories.
And I'll, like I said, I will send you an email with my information. So you may want to put a link to the bone marrow stuff on my website as well. So
right on.
We can definitely do that. Okay?
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Have a great weekend.
Right. You too.
Okay. That was David Tuckero, Jr., and with an incredible story. We'll be right back after these messages.
Live at Choice, where your imagination becomes your reality. If you can imagine it, it's possible. If you can believe it, it's yours. We get it. You're done with the way it is now. You're finished with all the frustration around why you feel stuck and your life isn't working. Imagine what your life would be like if you could have all the answers and see new possibilities. We at Live at Choice choose to make a difference. Live at Choice has developed a proven process and a series of questions that lead participants to the answers they seek, gaining new understanding and self-awareness for both your personal and professional life. If you're ready to get to the life you want, contact us today. Visit liveatchoice.com to get started.
Join Judy Hoberman on her radio show, Selling in a Skirt, Mondays at noon Central, for exciting discussions about challenges for women in today's society. The talk is about women in business, work and life balance, leadership, and current events related to gender communication. Be prepared to be inspired, motivated, and challenged. Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on the Tough Talk Radio Network is your connection to women nationally, internationally, and globally. So get comfy and see what the buzz is all about. Listen live on Mondays at noon by going to SellingInASkirtWithJudyHoberman.com.
Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, a show that delves into the hot topics of life. Lloyd takes life's issues head-on with hard-hitting interviews with professionals such as doctors and teachers, as well as those that have experienced life's alerting issues, whether professional, emotional, or physical. Lloyd wants to help those that are searching for answers to living a successful life. Life's Issues airs every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Find out more at lifesissueswithlloydrosen.com.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. Before I bring on my second guest, if you've joined us in the first half hour, but after I gave the phone number out, 347-989-1363 is the number you can call. Press number 1 on your phone, and you can get a message to me as far as a question for my guest. My next guest is what they call a jollytologist, if I said that correctly. I never heard of what it is, never heard of it before, but we're about to meet the world's one and only jollytologist. He got the unusual line of work of being a jollytologist after his wife unfortunately died of a rare liver illness at the age of 34. He saw how humor helped her and those around her cope, and he decided to become a jollytologist. He's an award-winning speaker, best-selling author. He has a number of books, way too many for me to list each one individually, but he has, and this is true what I'm about to say, he has a master's degree in humor from St. Mary's College in Minnesota, and he is nicknamed the King of Whimsy because he's designed all the children's shows at CBS Television in New York City. He also has had contact with Captain Kangaroo, if you know who he is. I don't know if my audience is as old as I am, but I definitely remember Captain Kangaroo and Mr. Green Jeans and Bunny Rabbit and Mr. Moose. But the honor that I'd like to bestow on Mr. Klein is that comedian Jerry Lewis has said that my guest is a noble and vital force in watching over the human condition. And who would have thought that it would be a jollyologist? Let me, at this time, spend no more time talking about him, but talk to him. Welcome, Alan. How are you today?
I am absolutely fantastic. And yourself?
Hey, if I was any better, I think I was with you. I guess I am,
aren't
I? So, as I said in my intro, I've never heard of a jollycologist. So what is a jollycologist?
First of all, you've got it right. It's jollytologist, and I made it up because, Lloyd, I think you can be whatever you want in this world, and I studied humor, and in Greek, the word gelos, G-E-L-O-S, means laughter and study of isology. So for a while, I was calling myself a jellotologist, and people heard it and thought I made that kind of wiggly dessert. So
nice.
I changed it to jollytologist, and people kind of get a little hint of, you know, that I deal with humor, laughter, and play.
Now, if I remember correctly, reading your website, you have like 14 and 19 books written?
Yes, I have 19, and actually I have a deadline. I was working on it this morning for book number 20. And some of them are, like my first book, The Healing Power of Humor, or my second book, The Courage to Laugh, specifically about the therapeutic value of humor. Then I had so many quotations about laughter and humor, I start putting those together, and Random House started to publish my quotation books of uplifting, motivational, inspirational, often funny quotes or anecdotes in certain categories. And the latest book is Having the Time of Your Life, Little Lessons to Live By, and the one right before that is Always Look on the Bright Side, Celebrating Every Day to the Fullest.
Now, I myself personally do not take life very seriously. I make a joke of almost everything except when it is serious, and I have to be serious. I mean, I don't make jokes at funerals and stuff like that.
Right.
But I have a lot of people tell me, you're a sick puppy. And I look at them and I go, what I said is true, isn't it? And they go, yeah. I said, well, I'm not that sick then. So I make a joke about everything. And I get it from my uncle and my aunt, because I read your bio about your wife passing away at such a young age and using humor to help her. My grandfather died when I was about 14 years old of liver cancer. And because we were so young, our parents would want to keep us away from him and not see the pain that he was going through. So my uncle would watch us outside playing and stuff like that, and he would make jokes about things. And his wife, my aunt, would say, "That's not funny. We had it hysterical." My question here is, why do people not feel that they can be funny and humorous in those times of seriousness?
Well, I think part of it's background, part of it's family. As you said, you could laugh at some stuff. Other people, your relatives, cannot. But, Lloyd, when you're growing up, often people are told, settle down, get serious, wipe that smirk off your face. And suddenly we start growing up and we become very serious. The world is very serious. Well, the truth is the world is the way it is. And it's our attitude. You know, we can see things lightly or we can take them very heavy. Give you one example, you know, of humor in a very difficult situation that I would never think there'd be any humor myself, and I'm a jollytologist. But Viktor Frankl talked about using humor in a German concentration camp. And he said every day he would go in the corner of the yard with another prisoner, and they would joke about some little thing. I can't imagine what you would find to joke about, but he said, you know, the crumb of bread or a guard whose uniform wasn't exactly right. They'd find some little thing. And he talks about it lifting him up, looking, giving him hope, because he knew every day at a certain time they would get a little bit of humor and he'd meet with this other person. And he credits it in part with his survival of that horrible circumstance. So humor is a great coping tool, and some people can't see that. And so when you laugh at something that's not so funny, you know, to them, they're going, how could you laugh at this? How, you know the expression, how can you laugh at a time like this? And often things are serious, but often we don't have to take ourselves so seriously or look for the humor. I do a lot of work with hospice and with hospice employees. And they know, because sure, death is serious, and sure, we're losing someone that maybe we loved or a friend, but there's always humor. I mean, at a funeral, people look sometimes in the coffin and go, God, that person never looked so good, you know. the fact is, there's laughter and tears are very close, and so humor is cathartic. Good laugh is cathartic as tears. And often what happens when you're laughing? Tears start rolling down your face. There's a whole interesting research I won't go into about tears from laughter and tears from actual crying. But they're both very cathartic. They both have toxins that help us get that bad stuff out of our body. So even in difficult times, laughter could be very beneficial. But, of course, we don't want to put people down. We don't want to hurt them. So that's not beneficial when we're doing that. But if a natural laugh comes out of a situation, even a serious situation, it's very helpful.
And it is, laughter and humor is therapeutic.
It can be, or it can hurt people. You can put someone down, you know. Give you an example. My father was as bald as I am. But you can never say he was bald because he did not like that fact. It was very obvious, you know, to everyone just looking at him, but you couldn't say anything about his baldness. I, on the other hand, I joke about it, and I tell people I'm a former expert in how to cure baldness. you know, and I'm almost totally bald. Because what humor does, it gives us the upper hand on anything. So if I could joke about my baldness before anyone else does, I've gotten the upper hand. They can't hurt me. And with my father, it was like it was upsetting him joking about it because it kind of acknowledged that he had no hair and he didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, it is an issue. Humor is an issue that can definitely help somebody or it can hurt somebody, and you need to be aware of which one you're using it as. Can you give us some examples of how the quotations in your books have changed people's lives?
Oh, my goodness. I get letters and emails all the time, and the most powerful one was a woman that wrote me a long handwritten letter. She said, I read one of the quotes in your book, and she said, for 55 years, I've never told anyone about this, but she said, when I was a teenager, I was violently raped twice. And she said, I never told anyone about it. I'm now in my 70s. And she said, I found a quote in one of your books by Dale Carnegie, and she said, I have taken back my power. I use that quote every day, and I've gotten on with my life, and I've forgiven the people that hurt me. And the quote is so powerful. It's a couple of sentences. I'll read that. It's, when we hate our enemies, we're giving them power over us, power over our sleep, our appetites, our blood pressure, our health, and our happiness. Our enemies would dance with joy if only they knew how they were worrying us and getting even with us. Our hate is not hurting them at all, but our hate is turning our days and nights into a hellish turmoil. So just that one quote helped her change her life and start enjoying life again.
Well put. I had a guest on last week who talked about forgiveness, and I think that falls into the same category.
Oh, definitely. I think forgive this. There's two things. I'm in writing my next book. It's called You Can't Ruin My Day, and it's about how we give away our power, and we give away our power to situations and to other people, and we allow it to ruin our day. So there's 52 wake-up calls to not let that happen, and two of them are very powerful. One is forgiveness. Because just as this quote and the woman realized that by not forgiving the people that did this terrible thing to her, they didn't even know, you know, they probably long forgot about it, and here she is carrying that around with her and ruining her life for 55 years. So we've got to forgive. Forgive ourselves is one wake-up call, and the other is to forgive other people. Because it doesn't really serve us. It doesn't benefit us to carry around all that hatred.
No.
And you're getting a little preview of my next book here, but it is gratitude. And I think they go hand in hand, that if you can just be grateful, and I think you said that with the last guest, I heard part of that interview, how every day, and I'm paraphrasing here, but every day you're grateful for what God has given you.
It
makes such a big difference. What were you going to say, Lloyd?
Oh, I agree with you 100%, and I think that every day that you wake up and you're healthy and, you know, on above the ground, you should be thankful to God for that. I'm naturally funny. Comedians who go into comedy, they always tell the story of how in school they were the jokester, or how they were the family entertainment at dinners and stuff like that. But my question is this. Are you born funny, or can you create yourself to be funny?
I think it takes a little bit of each, maybe. You know, a lot of those comedians use humor as a defense mechanism, as a way of coping. You know, Charlie Chaplin, I think it was his His father was an alcoholic, and his mother went insane and was put in an institution. And he used humor to help him rise above that. Alan King, Carol Burnett, all of them had very, very difficult childhoods. And they used humor because it was a way of coping. I had a friend, he's no longer alive, but he had several brothers. I think there were four brothers. And one of them was basically a gangster. the other one, something else, and the other one, you know, there were four not so great stuff about the other brothers. And he used humor to kind of deal with his family. And sometimes it was sarcastic, cynical humor, and people, you know, say, how could he do that? You know, he was putting down people. But it was the way that he coped with life. And I could see why. It was because life with him and the brothers was so difficult. So people have used humor, comedians have used humor to help them arise above their situation. And I think that's what anyone can do. You don't have to be a comedian. But I think maybe you're also born with a natural talent and you can develop it. I was watching a video the other day of an English comedian, Izzy something like that. I don't know the name exactly, but there was like a documentary of how he started, and he had this passion to be a comedian, but he failed so many times when he got up in front of an audience. But by doing it over and over and realizing what he is best at in comedy, he's now a big top comedian in Britain. You know, and I've been professional speaker for over 20 years, and people laugh a lot in my programs, although I don't tell jokes, but stories, interactions. I was probably awful when I started, you know. I was probably terrible, but I had this passion to show people how to use humor to rise above any situation because my wife had a great sense of humor and helped us get through those difficult 3 years when she had the terminal illness. So I wanted to share that with, you know, a passion to share that with the world. And I probably was not very good at the beginning, but you develop, you know, you keep, as this comedian said in the documentary I was watching, which I've done too, is you keep, you know, what gets a laugh and you throw away the rest. So after you've done it for several years, you have material that you know it's going to mostly work and be funny. So you develop it. But I think you also have a little bit of a knack to a little talent to first want to do it and then being, you know, a certain skill that you learn, but something in you that might help that skill.
Yeah, I know I have a number of people tell me I should be a comedian, I should do open mic night and stuff like that.
You could try. I took a 10-week stand-up comedy class because I wanted to learn about that, and I did it, and I was kind of funny because you graduate, you go to the nightclub and you do it. But I realized doing it, it's not the venue that I wanted to do that in because people were calling out stuff, they were cursing, there was smoking, the days when you could smoke in nightclubs, they were drinking. It was not what I want, you know, it's not what I wanted to do, but it was a great experience. So I encourage you to do that and at least try it.
Yeah, I mean, trying it and doing it are two different things, and you can definitely try anything in the world that you want. It's just a question
sure.
of whether you succeed and want to continue or whether you want to just say, okay, I've tried that. That's on my bucket list. I've crossed it off.
Yeah.
Now, your first book was called The Healing Power of Humor, and it's reaching its 40th printing and is in 9 different languages.
Right. So that totally amazes me.
What made you decide to write? What made you decide to start writing and ending up having a book that was your very first one being 40th printing?
Yeah, I realized when I look back that I probably always was a writer, that in grade school I used to write some poems for like the little school newspaper. So I realized there was a seed in there that was always there, and then I kind of forgot about that, and I went and became a scenic designer for CBS Television for 10 years, and that's a whole other part of my life. But I, after my wife died, and she had this great sense of humor, I'll give you one example. She was in the hospital with a copy of Playgirl magazine with a male nude centerfold. And she said, "Alan, I really like this nude picture this month. Can you put it on the wall by the bed over here?" And I said, "Alan, this is a hospital. You know, this is not appropriate." And she said, "Well, maybe you're right." She said, "Why don't you get a leaf from the plant on the counter over there and cover up that part?" And I did that, Lloyd, and things are fine for the first day. They were fine for the second day. But by the third day, the leaves start shriveling up, and we would laugh. The nurses would come in the room and laugh. And I realized looking back, it wasn't a lot of laughter, but it helped us get that little reprieve that humor always gives you. It helped us cope at least for a minute or so. With the laughter. And so after she died, I went back to school to learn about humor, therapeutic humor. And I went to school and studied in and got a master's degree in human, H-U-M-A-N, development. And then I started to speak on the subject. I belonged to the National Speakers Association. I remember going to one conference. And you know how you're at the right place at the right time? And I kept hearing people say, you know, if you really want to get your message out, you need a book. You need a book, you need a book. And so I thought, I need to write a book about therapeutic humor. And so I sat down and wrote the book, and it was Norman Cousins at the time talking about his healing with humor. And the rest, I guess, as they say, is history.
This is true, but... I have to say, I'm just exactly the way you said about the Playgirl picture being on the wall with the leaf over it, and that's the kind of humor that I usually use, and people are just, like I said, like you said to your wife, it's not appropriate, but she found the idea to put the leaf over it, so that made it definitely appropriate, I guess, until the leaf started to shrivel up. Now, with the 19 books that you've written, every one is obviously a little different. What's the best way for people who have your books or want to get your books to use your books?
Would you like to be more up to date with the real estate market? Do you have some nagging questions you want answered by experts who don't have anything to gain or lose by telling you a straight answer? Tune in to Fast Talk with Vicki Wachtel and get the latest on this fast-paced market. Start your Mondays off well-informed by listening to Vicki's Tell It Like It Is brand of wisdom. Listen live Mondays, 8:30 a.m. on the Tough Talk Radio Network by going to fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com. Miss the show but want to go back and listen? That's okay. Just visit fasttalkwithvickiwachtel.com to catch up on past episodes. Fast Talk Mondays, 8:30 a.m. Central.
Live a choice where your imagination becomes your reality. If you can imagine it, it's possible. If you can believe it, it's yours. We get it. You're done with the way it is now. You're finished with all the frustration around why you feel stuck and your life isn't working. Imagine what your life would be like if you could have all the answers and see new possibilities. We at Live a Choice choose to make a difference. Live a Choice has developed a proven process and a series of questions that lead participants to the answers they seek, gaining new understanding and self-awareness for both your personal and professional life. If you're ready to get to the life you want, contact us today. Visit liveitchoice.com to get started.
Hello. Hello, hello. Hello.
Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, a show that delves into the hot topics of life. Lloyd takes life's issues head-on with hard-hitting interviews with professionals such as doctors and teachers, as well as those that have experienced life's alerting issues, whether professional, emotional, or physical. Lloyd wants to help those that are searching for answers to living a successful life. Life's Issues airs every Friday at 1:30 p.m. Central Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network. Find out more at lifesissueswithlloydrosen.com.
Hello.
Hello, Alan, are you there?
I'm here.
Ah, okay, we lost you there for a minute. I'm sorry about that.
I know this story wasn't so great, but you didn't have to hang up.
I don't even have my hands near my phone, so I don't even know what happened. But we are winding down here, and I just wanted to give you the chance to give all my listeners the information as to how to find you, your books, and any information that you want them to find.
That's great. Can I do that right now?
You can. Go right ahead.
So people can find out about me and my books on my website, which is www.alanklein.com. And you need to spell that right. It's alanklein.com. So all my books are there. You can also find out about my speaking keynote speeches. And all my books can be found on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your favorite bookstore. And just ask for me or look online at Alan, A-L-L-E-N, Klein, K-L-E-I-N.
Sounds great. And again, I apologize to my listeners. I apologize to you, Alan, for getting disconnected because I did have one or two more questions. But that just means that I'm going to have you back on again, and we're going to have to talk more about humor because I know that it's an interesting part of my life, so and I think people need to use it more and more. So,
great. Love to be on again.
Having said that, I want to thank you for coming on and making my afternoon, hopefully my listeners' afternoons, a little bit more relaxed and a little funny, because that's what I intended to have with you, is a conversation about laughter and humor. So,
great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for coming on.
Have a great life.
You too, Alan. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. That was Alan Klein, who is a Jollytologist, and he made that title up himself. I asked him where it came from. He said, I made it up. So he uses humor as a mechanism to get through life, and he helps people. With 19 books written, he's working on number 20 right now. As for myself, I met with a nonprofit lawyer yesterday, and we're going to get started on this nonprofit foundation that I'm going to start to help educate and support people who have tried to commit suicide but failed, thank God, and people who are members of families that have had people who have succeeded at it. They need to know the issues. They need to know that people are not alone. They need to know that there are avenues out there to help you get through life's issues, which is exactly why we're on the air every Friday afternoon at 1:30 Central Time. So please join us next week. As I say every week, and I close my shows, you are only one person in this world of billions, but you may be a world to that one person that you've talked to on any given day in your life. So make it worth your while to get up every morning and help your neighbor with their life as much as they may help you with yours. So until next Friday afternoon, you have a great weekend, a great week, and we'll talk to you then. Take care.
You have been listening to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please visit toughtalkradionetwork.com.